It's me, Richie T, and it's a special episode of the Cultural Hall. I'm joined now with Allison Schiff. Am I saying it right?
Schiffler. Yep.
Okay. I wanted to make sure. I didn't want to say Scheifler.
Yeah.
And get that good. All sorts of terribly wrong. So it's Allison Schiffler. Though I could have assumed that, by the way it's spelled. Anyway, that's not the important part. It's a special episode here of the Cultural Hall, and you're asking yourself, who is Allison Schiffler? Well, let's get into it a little bit, because that's what this whole episode is about. You ever had a whole episode of anything about you?
Yeah, actually, one time I was on a candy podcast where someone wanted to ask me about candy. It was a little bit about me. It was weird, so... I'm used to this random stuff.
Do you make candy?
No, someone just had a podcast and was like, I want to ask you about your favorite kind of candy.
What is your favorite kind of candy?
I mean, Snickers is incredible.
Right, because it satisfies and it's great.
Yeah.
But do you have like some specific candies or, you know, maybe not so mainstream candies that you're like, that's the thing?
All right, so I lived in Russia. Snickers with hazelnut is amazing. They don't sell them here. It's amazing. It's the best.
That sounds
fun. So that's my elitist answer. You can't get it here. It's in Europe.
You've probably never tried the...
Right.
But why wouldn't they make something like that here? Just because Americans don't love hazelnut like the Russians?
You know, you go to different countries and they have like different versions of soda and stuff. It's like...
Better?
Motivation to travel, I guess. I don't know.
That's why you should travel. The food and the candy and the drinks. Like Mexican Coke. Everyone is like, Mexican Coke's the way to go.
Good example.
I mean, not that people should drink Coke, right? Because it's caffeinated and that's bad for you or whatever.
That's never been said by a Mormon ever, other than the ones that don't know what they're talking about. Caffeine is wonderful.
Are you a Coke gal or are you a Pepsi gal?
I hate to say this because it's really cliche, but I love Diet Coke. And I'm not a Diet Coke drinker. I don't go to 7-Eleven and get big gulps or anything. But when people have Diet Coke, I sip it like crazy.
That's
it just tastes amazing.
Are you a can or a bottle? Plastic bottle?
From the tap.
From
the 7-Eleven.
Oh, you're talking okay.
Yeah.
So you're a purist.
I'm a purist. I drink water, though. I don't drink that stuff.
Right.
I really try to...
Purist, elitist, Allison
Schiffler.
I'm a purist,
elitist, closet Diet Coke drinker.
What else did you talk about on this this candy podcast?
Mike and Ike's had that funny marketing thing where they like crossed out.
Yeah, one half of them.
One of them. And anyway, we talked about that and I didn't really know what to say because I don't have a lot of passion toward candy marketing. So it was just a random thing.
Is it a lengthy podcast? I can't get past this because it's like, I like Snickers. And that's to me where it seems like it'd be like, okay.
I don't know. It was a random thing. I did a 5-hour energy commercial back in the day. And after that, this guy was like, hey, I want to interview on my podcast. And I was like, okay. He's like, yeah, it's about candy. I'm like, what? Anyway, my life is weird. You know, like Liz Lemon's character in 30 Rock?
Sure.
That's like my life. It's just everything. Every day is insane.
Let's talk about it. Like what? You're born in?
So born in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
I was the senior class president.
Now, wait. So all of a sudden you went from being born to being 18 years old.
Right.
Brothers and sisters?
3 older brothers.
Okay.
Lots of WWF.
So the youngest.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not spoiled at all.
Were you, come on, toughen up. Was that the thing?
I mean, you kind of had to when like wham, bam, body slam, you know, Randy Savage.
How young of a person are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm 27.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're in the good era of the WWE back when it used to be WWF.
Well, and like I have a lot of, all my siblings are older than me. They're all in their mid to late 30s. And so I'm one of those kids that annoyingly talks about the 90s all the time because, you know, that was kind of the era I grew up in because I was always trying to be like my older sibling.
Sure.
So, you know how that's like the annoying thing to do?
Oh, yeah.
Like, talk about Saved by the Bell and Full House and, I don't know, other 90s stuff, a little Chumbawamba, whatever, all the time.
Slap bracelets. Like, Nirvana.
Slap bracelets.
Oh, I love Nirvana.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nickelodeon stuff. Yeah.
So 90s was your thing. Little WWF brothers. Uh-huh. Were you, let me ask you this, let's make sure this marriage works out, let's have Allison kind of baby, or were you a planned and intended thing?
That's a good question that I never asked, but my next oldest sibling is 7 years older than me, so I assume it wasn't planned, but my mom has always implied that the happiest day of her life was when she finally had a girl. All brothers and then a girl came, so... you know.
That's what moms say, though.
Right. Well, yeah, you're right. I know. I suck.
No. Oh, come on. I wasn't.
I'm just kidding.
It's rapport. I'm teasing. Yeah. You tease me. I'll tease you.
Right,
we'll talk about Snickers some more here in a bit. Yeah. So then we get through pretty normal growing up.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
Convert to the church, or is your family lifers?
My mom is a convert. She joined the church when she was in her 30s. All my brothers were little boys. I was the only one born into the church. So I was, you know, raised primary, all that stuff.
What about dad? Yeah.
So dad never joined the church, but he prays like a patriarch, has had the discussions since the felt board, you know, times of
felt board
the 70s,
Nephi.
Right?
Yeah.
My dad's heard it all. He knows more church history than anyone I've met.
Just stubborn?
He's stubborn. I mean, he's a smoker, so there's some other stuff there. But, I mean, one of the most spiritual men I've ever met.
Sure.
So, you know, loves the Mormon church a lot. Very spiritual.
Did he go with you guys? Would he go to that point? Like, he'd go to church with you guys on Sunday?
Yeah, he actually just texted me this past Sunday and said, hey, I'm going to church again.
Yeah.
How are you doing? I'm like, oh, good, great. We'll see.
Dad?
What? Yeah, I mean, wrote me every week on my mission, you know, always tells me, if I'm ever dating somebody, did he go on a mission? You know, that's my dad.
Looking just out for you.
Everyone in the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania mission has been trying to baptize him for decades. He's kind of a legend. And he sells chicken. That's what he does. And so he's a poultry salesman.
Okay.
And so he gives the missionaries, you know, chicken, you know, gives them a bunch of food. So he's known as the chicken man that everyone's trying to baptize. So that's my dad. And
he's hilarious. The chicken man of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
That is the best title ever.
My parents are great. Have you seen Seinfeld?
Sure.
You know, like George's parents?
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of my parents. Like, just lots of yelling. They're hilarious. Their marriage is great, but it's just really loud. And, you know, we're from the East.
Yeah, so it's a whole different thing than us Western folks.
Oh, yeah. I come out here and everyone's like, hi, I'm your new roommate. How are you? I love you. And I'm like, what's up? I'm from the East. You know, it's really like loud and sarcastic. And then over the 8 years, I've become a lot more accustomed to being like a nice, sweet, quiet Mormon. But not really, because here I am like voicing my opinion about being disfellowship. But anyway, so from the East.
And we'll get there. We'll get to the disfellowshipment. Yeah, yeah. I started to give that intro, and then I just got so wrapped up in the candy podcast.
We're here with Allison.
Yeah. And what? Anyway. Senior class president.
Yeah.
Yeah. Popular then, high school.
Well, so here's why. I mean, I'll say yes to the popular thing, even though I don't really like that label. But by definition, sure, I was popular. But I was
popular. Well, as an elitist, you have to. You have to be against titles like popular.
It makes it sound like I actually have money to travel.
Right.
So in my high school, you had like the hot blonde girls, and you had like the athletes and all these cafeteria tables, you know.
Sure.
I have to say my high school is actually pretty cool because it was actually a lot less segregated. But I was just kind of cool with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really was. I was just like the normal kid that sat with, you know, the hot black couple and the male ballerinas and the gamers, you know, the guys that had LAN parties. So I just kind of was friends with everybody. So that's why I was senior class president, because, you know, they weren't going to vote for the quarterback. He kind of mean
too polarizing.
Yeah, yeah, whatever. Exactly. And so anyway,
everybody loves Allison.
Yeah.
Allison just loves everyone.
And maybe I told everyone in my, you know, candidacy speech.
Oh, really?
And I did.
Did you really?
Yeah. I had parties. I was like, yeah.
We're going to have a barbecue.
Yeah.
It cool.
Great.
That's great.
Yeah.
So then we get around to 18. You graduate from high school, come to Utah to go to BYU?
UVU.
UVU.
Utah Valley University.
Couldn't get into BYU, huh?
Couldn't get into BYU. Couldn't get into the U. The class president had a GPA of a 2.6, maybe?
Oh, had a lot of fun.
Had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Took a lot of art classes.
Yeah.
Took a lot of math classes.
When you say art, like painting or like drawing or like ceramics?
Like ceramics and stuff like that. Like my last year, I just, you know, took a bunch of art classes. And before then, I was like failing biology and doing horrible at anything math and science. I either failed or got like D's in. So I had a pretty bad GPA.
Okay. 2.6.
2.6, I think. Because I want to say the U at the time accepted like, I think it was like 2.8 enough. So I got rejected from the U. It was the most devastation. The first time I was ever devastated in my whole life. Because I was going to go to the U and live in Salt Lake City. So then I told my brothers that maybe I'll apply to Utah Valley State College, UVSC. And I asked one of my brothers, do you think I'll get in? And he put his fingers on my neck to check my pulse. And he said, I think you're good. So got into UVSC. Of course I got in. I started attending UVSC when I was 19, and I started studying humanities and got my associate's in humanities. Then, do you want me to keep going?
Yeah,
you want,
please. Okay. I love it.
All right. Because
there's a mission in here somewhere.
Yeah. Then I went on a mission at age 21 as soon as I possibly can.
Cool.
Could.
Do you carry a little resentment that ladies can go earlier now?
I mean, I carry a resentment that we were told to, like, specifically instructed to dress ugly until a few years ago.
Yeah.
I look back on my mission pictures, and that's, like, my war story. I'm like, we had to look ugly by commandment.
Yeah.
Like, now you get to wear bright colors and, like, headbands on it. So, anyway, yeah, I mean, that would have been nice because I always wanted to go, but, you know.
Do you feel like it affected you, though? Like, if you if you don't look pretty, you feel like you're ugly, and then it, you know, can wear on you, like,
I
emotionally?
Mean,
do you feel like that?
I don't know. I don't have a huge opinion about that whole thing. I think if you're going on a mission for the right reason, you're probably not going to spend a ton of time getting ready in the morning.
Good answer.
Right?
Good answer.
Was that a test?
That is.
To see if I was a good missionary.
Yeah, why not? And you served in Russia?
Uh-huh. Vladivostok, Russia. So it's the far eastern side. When people are always like, oh, my cousin served and you know him. I'm like, I was 7 time zones away from Moscow, so I don't know him.
Is that anywhere near where the missionaries were abducted?
No, it's, well, I mean, Russia is literally half of the world. So it was.
So closer than here, but not much.
Closer than here, yeah. No, I actually recently saw that movie, though.
What'd you think?
Okay, here's what I thought about it. I thought it was really well done as far as, like, editing and acting was great. There were just a few things I didn't like. I hated that the missionaries looked like they were in their 30s.
Right.
I thought it would really be a lot more emotionally effective if you had these little, you know, 19-year-old boys being abducted as opposed to, like, a guy who probably has, like, 4 kids, right? Like,
2 kids, but yeah.
Okay. Like, no, it was great.
No, but absolutely.
You're like, I know them.
No, I actually, we've interviewed all of them, and
cool.
One of them I went to high school with, and
he's
a year older than me,
oh,
which
cool.
puts him at 34,
okay.
Which is great, but at some point, he's got to stop playing a missionary, you know? Like,
yeah.
He can start being the father of the missionary.
Right.
Or, like, the older brother that's chummy going, hey, you go get him.
My other thing about that movie, and this is a little bit of a spoiler alert if you don't know the story, but I think everybody knows.
It was in the news. It's okay. People should have seen it by
people
now.
People should. All I'm going to say is, you know, in the end, they're found, you know, they're released, et cetera. But I just hate the phone call when they tell the parents, and I just feel like the mom and the dad are just like, yeah, like they're just rejoicing and exciting. And I wanted a little bit more, like, heartfelt devastation, like finding out that news that your children who were held at ransom have been released. I feel like there would still be so much devastation and emotion of the fact that it still happened, as opposed to, like, oh my gosh, I'm so happy and we're throwing a party.
Everything is forgotten.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like the reactions of the parents at the end weren't very realistic. Other than that,
Pretty successful mission, like something that you enjoyed?
Oh my gosh. It's so far my favorite part of Earth so far.
Yeah.
I love it. It was the best 19 months of my life. I extended, so.
Good for you.
I never failed doing it. But yeah, it was the best. I would do it again. I didn't feel like I should probably, like, at some point have children in this life.
Cool.
Sometime, you know.
Yeah. You got to get that done.
Kind of focus on that at some point. But yeah, I loved it. I loved it so much. I can't even enough on how much it was.
So that brings us to here and the reason why you are here. This blog is going around. People might have seen it. Facebook is where I received it in a message from a friend, Jason, who said, hey, you know what? This is a great, great blog. You should get her in. And I said, done. That was yesterday. And now you're here sitting in front of me today. So I don't mess around. Got to get you in.
Oh, yeah.
But it's called, and you may have seen it, Dear Daughter, Your Mormon Mom Didn't Get Married Young. And then the kind of the caption for the blog that I saw, it was, I was born in the church. I went on a mission. I was disfellowshipped. And this morning, meaning yesterday morning?
It was last week. Last Thursday.
Last Thursday. Mm-hmm. I went back to the temple for the first time in 4 years. So we're going to get into it, and hopefully we remain in a way that you're comfortable talking about it. I don't need a lot of details. Obviously, people can whatever. But so you get back from your mission. High as a kite, right? It's like, this is the greatest thing. Man, I love the Lord and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So then what happened?
It was great. So I would say for the consistent year after my mission. I mean, you know, you first get back from your mission, I give away all my awesome Wes Anderson movies and Schindler's List, and I'm like, I can't watch these wonderful things anymore because I'm crazy. And, you know, I go to Forever 21 with my friends, and they're like, hey, you're back from your mission. Let's try on clothes. And I specifically remember one time trying on a dress, and I was like, I have too much cleavage. This is too tight. And they were just like, Allison, get off of your mission.
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on. And I mean, side note to that story, I was still wearing knee-high stockings at the time. So I'm there in Forever 21 trying on a dress, And they're like, what is that? Like, what are you wearing? I'm like, what? They make good
songs. I
was
commanded to be ugly.
Exactly. So anyway, I came back and I went through a weird period for a little bit, which I didn't think I would go through. I was a very normal missionary still.
Yeah, you seem a sociably normal
right?
person.
Yeah, I think so too. So on the mission, I had a lot of fun, but I was very, you know, sincere about the work and wasn't like robotically, you know, obedient. I mean, we had a very obedient mission, but I mean, it was very spirit of the law, do what feels right type of thing, which I think is how everybody should be. You know, you go by your own personal revelation.
Objection. So, it should be letter of the law. How many steps you get in a day?
You know, you don't believe that.
Yeah.
So anyway, I came home and thought like, oh yeah, I'm normal on the mission. I'll be normal home. It was super weird for a little bit. And I just,
like, what kind of stuff? Like going to bed early? Like, that's a guy. I don't know what to talk to about
a guy.
Like that stuff?
Like, I remember talking to my stake president when I first got home in Pennsylvania and he was like, how are you doing? And I was like, I'm not doing well at all. I haven't had an hour scripture study in days because we just keep doing things with my family, like all these family activities and, you know, going to movies and you know, my grandparents wanted to see me. So we're doing all these family activities and I like confessed to the stake president, I haven't studied my scriptures for very long. And I said, I even did the thing the other day where I just read one verse and went because I, you know, we were on our way to breakfast with grandma. And he's like, Allison, are you kidding me? He's like, you're hanging out with your family. Like, you're fine. You're not sinning. Don't worry about it. But of course, I'm all like, ooh.
Yeah. And the guilt that ensues with it.
I mean, to give you some perspective, my mom once confessed to the bishop that she was addicted to hot chocolate and that she looks forward to it too much. So I suddenly had like a mom moment. My mom is like, and so I'm having these moments where I'm like confessing nothing to the stake president. And he's like, you're fine. Just be fine. Anyway, so I eventually broke out of that mentality one PG-13 movie at a time. Then I asked my friend for the Royal Tenenbaums movie back. I'm like, actually, that's my favorite again. Yeah. So never mind. I'm like, I take back everything I was weird about. And then, you know, the clothes got tighter and I got a little bit, I mean, not to imply that I was heathen, but
or that a heathen is any of those things.
Exactly. But yeah, I adjusted pretty well. It was probably the first month or two that I was a little weird. And then, yeah, dating was great. I immediately started dating a guy from my mission. I'm actually the only sister from my mission not married to another elder.
There you go.
So, well, and I mean, not to imply that I'm proud of that. We just had a really small mission.
Sure.
So
really small, really tight. People get to know each other really well.
You come home, everyone started hanging out. A lot of them got
married. How small?
It's great. The smallest it ever was while I was there was 26 of us.
Oh my gosh, so really small.
The biggest it was like, I think, maybe 48.
And now there's like 300 because we have so many missionaries.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. And so I was one of two sisters at one point. For the majority, I was one of four.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know everybody's last name, first name. You know where everyone in the mission was from.
Sure.
So anyway, came home, hung out with mission friends, dated a guy from my mission for a little bit, just for a few months. And then I just like kind of casually dated, had another boyfriend. And then like trying to think of how things... And then it really wasn't until like April of 2010. So I got back 2009. April,
so about a year later.
So about a year later, I got into a relationship that was not.
Mormon guy? Okay.
Mormon guy. Maybe wasn't necessarily the best influence on me at the time. But, dating was great in the beginning. But I definitely started compromise, you know, covenants. And I mean, not to put him in a position where I'm, you know, villainizing.
Yeah, you can villainize someone.
But I mean, I definitely started like putting him and putting the relationship like above the church and above my covenants and all these things, like things that I was normally consistent in, like scripture study and prayer and going to church every Sunday. Like I suddenly, you know, was kind of, I guess, breaking down those barriers and those walls. And I was kind of like, oh, it doesn't really matter if I skip church sometimes or whatever, if like, you know, this guy and I are just going to like casually have sleepovers and, you know, things like that. And so things led to another. And then I was always very honest with my bishop about what was going on in my life. So
honest as far as the things that were going on. So it was like, hey, bishop, this happened.
Yeah, this happened. I need to fix it. And, you know, initially it was just like, all right, well, you're endowed. So that makes this much more intense.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as far as disciplinary process, work with it, you know, get you back to the temple as soon as we can, et cetera.
Was there ever any thought, once you kind of go to the bishop, like I guess it's, you know, they call it one or the first step of the repentance process when you kind of go talk to the bishop and admit it,
uh-huh.
like, that you feel like they felt like going to him that you were done and wanted to make the change, or you were like, hey, this is what's going on, and now I'm headed.
Now
I'm
going to
go back and see how he's doing.
No, I mean, at the time I was pretty aware that, like, you know, once you do serious things, and I mean, just generally things like, you know, drug, alcohol, sex, that's, or like porn, you know, child abuse. Let's kind of all put that into one category, even though they're all incredibly different. But all of that is stuff that can get you, you know, distanced from the temple, distanced from a calling, can get you disfellowshipped, you know, anything like that. And I'm sure there are a few other things I'm missing. But, you know, admitting to that stuff and, you know, wanting to get back on the right track. I mean, of course, there's a procedure to everything, but emotionally speaking, the bishop kind of has to, like, kind of get a feel. You know, he's using his judge of character to see, like, okay, how serious are you about this?
Yeah.
And, like, how much damage has this done? And what exactly? So, you know, at this point for me, it was just, you know, simple law of chastity breaking. You know,
sure.
I mean, I'm reluctant to be open about that. But at the same time, it's like, well, what Mormon do I know who hasn't?
Right.
Struggled with that in their 20s.
This, like, is such a rarity. I've never heard of this.
I know. Yeah. I'm just the harlot Isabel over here. But,
oh, geez.
But
her words, not mine. That wasn't what I thought.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, yeah. And so, you know, talked to him about that, tried to get everything fixed. And.
But it's hard.
Yeah.
I think you don't know this about me because I'm venturing that you've never listened to the Cultural Hall before.
I haven't. I just started.
Thank you for doing so.
You're welcome.
If you get a chance, you can hear my story that's shared in an old episode, 54.
Okay.
But I was excommunicated.
Okay.
And it was for a situation similar. I mean, it's a lot of chastity stuff. And it was in a relationship where I loved the person a great deal. But because of choices, it was like, you know, like you say, putting the other priorities above the church or the gospel or my testimony, or even really what was best for me.
Yeah.
But you get so deep into it that for my experience was that I felt like I couldn't get out of it. Like there wasn't a clean break from it where it's just like,
definitely.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was hard. And I mean, I'll be open about this. Emotionally speaking, talking to like a 65-year-old man in a suit about law of chastity stuff is really uncomfortable.
Right.
I mean, you know, I haven't even had like any PTSD or like child traumatic things, but just like being in that room was really like, I got this, like, you know, him asking questions and all sorts of things.
Is it uncomfortable from the embarrassment part or because of the age difference or the gender difference?
For me specifically, it was a gender difference. Like, I think if I were talking to a 25-year-old man about it, it'd be equally as uncomfortable.
Okay.
And to this day, I really hope, and I'm sure, you know, I'll touch on this later, but I really do hope that the church can incorporate a little bit more, you know, female involvement in disciplinary
That's a huge issue right now, not only in disciplinary issues, but just in meetings in general, temple recommends and those things where it's like, okay, can it, you know, is it, you know, administration of the priesthood to have only men in these meetings because, you know, but I don't know that I would feel any more comfortable or less comfortable if it swung the other way so that there had to be a woman and a man in every meeting. I think I'd be like,
right.
This is, you know, uncomfortable. It'll be interesting to see where that develops anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that was my first bishop. By the way, I've had like maybe 7 bishops in the last 4 years through this whole process. So,
which is always awesome because.
That's great because you have to explain your story all over again.
Yeah.
And you're like, don't you guys write this down so you can like eventually delete it?
Here, let's turn on the phone recorder and let's just, you know, let's just. It is though.
And I actually was just talking to a really good friend of mine about this the other night who's going through also some disciplinary stuff, and she's pretty much at the end of her road, but she was like, I just hate that I've had to explain this like so many times, and you know, it's just like, man, I totally get what you're talking about. So, you know, the first time with the first bishop, and he was an amazing man. I mean, amazing bishop, really compassionate. He really emphasized to me, you know, the Savior has already forgiven you, is what he kept saying to me. He said, I hope you realize that, you know, you don't need to walk around feeling shame. He said, you've already been forgiven, and now we're just going to work through this. And that man was amazing. He really was a godsend. He just had a very clear perspective on, you know, this isn't the end of your life. You haven't done the worst thing in the world, which, of course, is this, like, returned missionary who, like, the worst thing I'd really done and up until that point was, like, been disrespectful to my dad growing up because we butted heads when I was a teenager.
Like, you're stupid!
Right? Yeah, like, that was it. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm, like, telling him a pretty big, you know, pretty big deal, you know, some covenant breaking, and he just compassionately, you're already forgiven. we're just working on this. We're going to get you back to the temple. I don't want you to worry about it. And mm-hmm. it was the best thing in the world. You know, unfortunately, it continued to, you know, make mistakes, which, and then I moved, you know, new bishop, new council, new everything. The very first disciplinary council I had was with the bishopric, but something that really bothered me was one of the counselors couldn't be there. So it was like a guy from the elders quorum. And yeah. I mean, this was 4 years ago, so I don't know who it was. I assume he was in the elders quorum president.
But yeah, the protocol
but I didn't know
of
him.
Having. Yeah.
I didn't know what was going on. I was like, oh, cool. So he gets to know about this. So that's great. And, you know, obviously now I'm a person who's like openly blogged about it. So I don't know if I can like look yeah. back and be offended. But at the time I was, you know, at the time I was like, well, cool.
Well, great. Here goes.
Here goes. Let me just, you know, tell you guys all about these shameful things. Then you can stone me. Anyway, so that council was super difficult. It's hard. I remember getting a letter that was hand-delivered to me by two men in the Elders Quorum that said, you know, please attend this disciplinary action on this date for unbecoming behavior of a Latter-day Saint.
Hmm.
Like, that phrase, like, killed me. I was just like... And what was really hard for me was my boyfriend at the time had not been through the temple. So as we were kind of talking through, you know, our own experience and, you know, trying to get this taken care of, it was really difficult that, like, my process had to be so much.
Yeah.
Like, that was hard, I'll be honest. I was kind of like, all right, like, geez, we just did the same thing. And I get it. You know, it's a double standard. It really is. The temple really is for more dedicated members of the church. As harsh as that is, that's who goes there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understood that. Like, you know, bigger standard. I was up for some bigger
discipline. Held to a higher
right.
bar. Yeah.
It's okay. And then... I don't know. Anyway, and then, you know, years went by and I basically just never got out of bad habits. And one of those reasons was really just like, you know, shame. When you're in a place where you feel crappy about yourself emotionally, you have low self-esteem. And I don't mean in a sense of like feeling ugly or insufficient, but just feeling like I am a crappy person. Like I went on a mission. Here I am. Like at the time I was working with sexually abused kids and I was working in a treatment center and people were always like, oh, Allison, you're so great. You're so selfless. And I'm like, you don't really know who I am. I suck. Yeah. I am like making horrible decisions and I can't even like speak in church, you know? And so internally I just felt a lot of shame and I felt crappy about myself. And I, despite really wonderful leaders, I never really worked through that shame. I just felt so horrible all the time.
It's hard. It's hard too, because like you almost re-shame
yeah.
is how I felt. Cause it's like, okay, this time, nope. I got it. Yeah. I'm going to do it this time. Here we go. I've got this. And, you know, I would do well for a couple of weeks or a month or a couple of months. And then something would occur again. And it's like, oh, and I'm even worse than I was before because I can't do this. And,
well,
you know,
exactly.
everything is my fault and I can't control myself. So what? Am I a person that doesn't have control? And it's just this downward, terrible spiral.
Yeah, I mean, you feel like an addict in a way. And I mean, maybe there was some addictive behavior going on there. But I remember thinking to myself, like, oh my God, addicted to bad things. And like, what? I just can't stop. And all these things. It was really just like, no, I mean, I don't think there was really necessarily anything psychologically or emotionally wrong with me. Like, sure, I was having a pretty hard time in life, but I was making normal decisions. And that's something that I definitely look back on and hope that like more people can realize when they're going through this process, like, yeah, therapy can help you, but you're not like mentally ill. It doesn't mean you're crazy. You're just like making bad choices that make you feel crappy. Every human in the world can relate to that. It's not necessarily a spiritual.
I want to ask you about the disciplinary council because I went through two. I was disfellowshipped, then came back, and then I was excommunicated, and then ultimately came back. Spiritual experience at all, or just kind of cold?
It wasn't a spiritual experience. I mean, I definitely felt a lot of love and compassion. I remember, and I've had two. But I remember in one of, this is actually interesting, in both of my disciplinary councils, one counselor in each of them in the bishopric told me about disciplinary action they had had in their own life and gave me advice, which I thought was very compassionate, very wonderful. One of them in the very first one said, he started crying and he said, I've been through this and I just want you to know that it really helped me to be able to just walk around the temple grounds. And he said, I just want to give you that counsel to do that and to feel the spirit on the temple grounds.
Mm-hmm.
And he started weeping, as you could tell he was really, you know, thinking of some hard things he had went through. So that part of it was really beautiful. I mean, something a little bit difficult was just, you know, retelling the story, but also I kind of felt like I was being challenged in those. I don't know if you experienced that.
Sure.
But, you know, you're telling your story and you kind of get this whole, well, good cop, bad cop thing. Like my bishop was always really kind and compassionate. And then I felt like it was counselor number one's job to be like bad cop. And like, well, how do we know you won't do this again? How do we know you're serious? And I was like, dude, I'm like pouring my soul out to you, right? Like, I'm serious. Yeah. I don't have to be here.
Yeah, exactly. I was the one who came and talked to you. You didn't have to find out about it from, you know, the other guy or somebody else.
So that was hard. And I mean, I don't want to necessarily say, oh, that's so messed up of them. Like, you know, somebody at some point felt like we need to find out if they're serious. We can't just have people, you know, taking things like temple covenants casually, because they're not. It's a really serious thing. And I understand that. But that was a really difficult part of it, feeling like I was challenged in how serious I was. But I get it. For 4 years, I was saying, okay, I'm confessing. Sorry, I messed up again. Hey, sorry, I messed up. And like I said, I was honest every time. So every time I came in to be honest with them and be like, sorry, I relapsed again. You know, I messed up again. And at one point, I had a bishop. This was probably bishop number 3 or 4. He said, honestly, I'm going to have to talk to the stake president because I'm not really sure what to do at this. Hmm. And he said, I've never had a situation like, and he was a sweet man, but I will say bad move on his part to make me feel like, you know, Ted Bundy or something. I was like, oh my gosh, I am the exception. I am like exceptionally bad. And that made me feel horrible because I mean, all I had really done was just continued my behavior. Mm-hmm. That's all that had happened. It hadn't moved to anything more extreme. It wasn't like I was now like, oh, well, now I'm into child porn, by the way. That's what it's advanced to. You know, it didn't get anywhere to a point of like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with you? It was just like, nothing ever ended. I'm really sorry. His words literally were, I need to talk to the stake president and figure out what to do. We got a situation like this. And I just remember thinking, much longer I can do this. Like, this is exhausting. And it's just, it was.
So what changed? What was the thing? Because you kept going. Kept relapsing, you said.
Well, lots of things changed. One thing that changed was the source of addiction, I guess. I don't know. Let's say evil ex-boyfriend. So the breakup happened. Nothing changed after the breakup. But boyfriend moved on to LA to pursue his life dream, which was the biggest blessing in the world and was, I'm sure, an answer to prayers. And so, But honestly, it really was just, you know, me having really supportive friends, me having people open up to me and have their own story of recovery, I guess. You know, one of my best friends in the world went through some pretty horrible sexual abuse as a child. And she has always been really open with me about how, you know, forgiveness and the atonement and recovery is so possible, even if you're going through the most unspeakable thing in the world. And that she has always acted as a really huge source of motivation for me, you know, to kind of compare my situation to think like, this is something I can recover from. She can recover from that. I can recover. Because, of course, it, you know, parallel to all that, you know, sin and bad decision and covenant breaking was, you know, my heartache and like just feeling so heartbroken and so just low, you know, really lowly and really unworthy and all these horrible things. So I had a lot to resolve. It wasn't just church disciplinary action, you know, and getting back into the church. It was like getting back to my best self, getting back to Sister Schiffler, who was like, you know, super confident and happy. And, you know, I mean, before my mission, I was a gospel doctrine teacher and a Relief Society president and a Relief Society teacher. And, you know, just kind of a bit of a Mormon superstar. Like, oh, my gosh, look at all these high callings where I am just so cool, you know, type of thing. And I mean, I say that a little bit mockingly because we take callings and...
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Right. It doesn't matter what your calling
no.
is. Like, Relief Society president doesn't mean you're any more spiritual than the greeter. Like, you know, but that's kind of like how I felt. I put myself in a position of finally being disfellowshipped and thinking, I can't believe I've... Mm-hmm. Which is something most people can relate to. But at the same time, I didn't really sink that low. I just made mistakes. Anybody can make mistakes.
Sure.
And so that was like kind of a reality check I had to really make with myself. And it took a really long time to get to that point. Definitely, you know, took some therapy, took some really intense conversations with friends. But I mean, something that really helped me through it, which, you know, you can see on the blog, you start reading it and you're like, why are all these millions of people on here? Just people that helped me throughout the whole thing who always were unconditional with their love and, you know, specifically friends that just always had hope in me. I was kind of that friend who was like, always with her boyfriend who was bad for her. And like, you know, we all know Allison's not doing too well type of thing. And, you know,
and they just stuck with you.
Right. Yeah. They just stuck with me and were always there for me. And I'm sure they were annoyed out of their minds at me just being like, you know, crying about my story, just constantly saying, and this needs to get better and I need to cut him out of my life and I need to start doing this. And then nothing changed. You know, I was that friend. It's like having you know, like a drug addict friend or an alcoholic friend. And you're like, yeah, I get it. You understand what you need to do. What are you going to be like tonight type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it was as far as like patterns of behavior go. But yeah, things changed. And in the past 6 months, I've been clean. I've been like, I don't know, sober, you know, whatever. I've done everything that I needed to do. I got myself out of bad situations. I had plenty of opportunities to screw things up.
Sure.
Plenty of opportunities. And
did you hear that? Plenty.
Plenty, guys.
Yeah, guys, that's right.
Yeah, so I don't know. I, you know, kept working with my bishop. And I'll be honest, I kind of had to be a little bit pushy with my bishop. I kind of had to be like, okay, remember you told me 6 months from now I'd be back in the temple. Like, are we still on that? I want to be back.
Yeah.
Like, you know. Anyway, and so yeah, I don't know. I'm like probably skipping over like to lots and lots of stuff. But eventually I got to last Wednesday night, a reinstatement committee.
Mm-hmm.
Reinstating the church.
Pretty cool. Spiritual wise?
Really cool. Really hard. I'll be honest. All of Wednesday.
Go over the details of what you did just one more time. No,
okay,
I'm kidding.
Right. No, but seriously. So all of Wednesday, I was really excited, really happy.
Fast? Did you fast?
No. Would you have?
I had to mine, yeah.
Oh, I wasn't told to.
Oh.
I ate a burger that day, probably too.
You're like, this is great.
Yeah, right. So yeah, just felt super happy. It was scheduled for 6:30, and at 6:15, as I was driving Salt Lake City, and started feeling super anxious and super scared and I don't know, I just felt really weird. And so,
like that it wouldn't be real, or
I don't know.
It wasn't gonna happen?
I still look back and think, like, what was the source of that anxiety? And I don't know. I just felt really, yeah, maybe that was it. Because I guess for the past 4 years, I'd always been working on this, working on getting my temple recommend back. And then all of a sudden it didn't happen because it didn't, because, yeah, you know, it was my choice. And this time I was like, well, what if it doesn't happen for some other reason? Like, you know,
right.
It's a committee, they have to agree on it, you know.
Yeah. The Lord inspires them, because it really is just based on what those people in the room think.
Right.
And so if the Lord inspires them differently, I remember right. feeling very similar where it's like, well, I think so.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Right.
I hope this works out right.
So I was super nervous. And to be honest, that Sunday before when I was told about the committee, I was told that the ward clerk would be in it, who is someone who's pretty, I don't want to say really good friend of mine, but he's an acquaintance and I know him well enough that it made me really uncomfortable. But by the time Wednesday night came around, I was okay with it. And I was just kind of like, okay, let's just do this. It's fine. So we had the committee and I talked about everything and unexpectedly was sobbing, which I'm sure anybody listening to this is like, well, of course you were sobbing. But like, I felt like I'd gotten to a point where I was like, you know what? I'm going to get in there, tell my story. I'm really proud of myself. Getting my temple recommend back, I'm done. And let's just do this. But it was devastating. I just sobbed through the whole thing, you know, and my bishop was really sweet, and actually I could really tell that he was very careful about like not asking me too many questions, because I was just like a mess, mm-hmm. reliving everything, and it was horrible. It's been a really horrible past 4 years, I'll be honest. It's been so hard. And so talking about all of that and talking about this big epic downfall, you know, horrible and humiliating and embarrassing and just hard. So yeah, after I talked about all of that, you know, my bishop's incredible. And then, you know, the first counselor did his thing and said, you know, how do we know you're not going to do this again? And I said, you don't. That I don't know that I won't do this again. All mm-hmm. I can tell you right now is that I have a testimony of the restoration temple and I don't want to do this again. And I'm not going to, because I don't want to, but
No, we're going to need you to be perfect.
Need you to give us a guarantee and sign it. Like, no one can do that.
Right.
Nobody can. The prophet can't do that. You know, we live day by day and we see what happens. And that's what I told him. I said, I'm going to live well. That's a commitment I'm going to make, but I'm going to make. And then, yeah. And it was great. You know, talked to them about my mission a lot as well. Second counselor was a lot more compassionate. Yeah. Then we ended it and,
get your recommend.
Got my recommend.
You can't see it, but she's smiling right now. Like you wouldn't believe. Just saying.
I have a temple recommends. Pretty cool.
You went last week, though, for the first time, right?
Yeah, so
first time back?
I went last week. So this was on Wednesday night. So by the time we were done, I'd go as soon as I could. But as soon as I could was the next morning, which was Thursday. Although, you know what? I have to back up. After that council, I was devastated. So I got home. My roommates were there.
After you'd been reinstated, you were devastated.
Yeah, I'd been reinstated. I had my temple recommend for the first time in 4 years.
They're like, now what's wrong?
Yeah. Well, no, I, you know, shook everybody's hand, went home. I was just super melancholy the whole night. My friends and I went to Cold Stone. We talked.
Like
it was cool.
You do.
I was like, we do.
Priesthood ordinances and Cold Stone ice cream go right. together hand
exactly.
in hand.
And, well, and I thought that I would just be like, I'm so happy, everybody, you know, and but I wasn't. I was lying in bed that night and I was staring at the wall, just crying and crying. And my roommate came in, really incredible person. She came in, was like, what are you doing? What's going on? And I said, I don't know. It was so, so hard. I just, you know, broke down crying. And I said, it was so hard. It was so hard talking about all of that. It was really hard talking about specifically, you know, the ex-boyfriend and when I met him. And I just felt horrible. And I told her about that. And she just said, Allison, why just, you know, I want you to be happy. And I said, I know I should be. I don't know why I'm crying right now. I don't know why I'm so devastated, but I was. And she said, you know what? You'll feel better in the morning. You know, I love you. I'm really proud of you. You know, she started crying, you know, said all these really incredible things.
And then
things.
We just hugged each other.
And then we hugged.
And then we scrapbooked.
Yeah. And then we scrapbooked. And then we had a Diet Coke.
Yeah.
So it was, it was a really sweet moment. But for whatever reason, I went to bed with swollen eyes and, you know, it was super, I was just crying so hard. And then I woke up, you know, 7 that morning, went to the temple and I felt a lot better.
Salt Lake. There you go. Doing it live.
Yeah.
Doing the live session.
Yeah. So I went to the Salt Lake Temple, which was great. And I felt a lot better the next day. Although, so I have to say, I had written a lot of that blog post already. But that night, Wednesday night, I was like, I'm not. I don't want to do this. I don't want to talk about it. I'm just super ashamed, et cetera. And then after I went to the temple on Thursday, well, I went 3 times. I went in the morning. I went with my roommate Lacey in the afternoon. And then I went with the steak. There was like a big tri-steak devotional temple thing. So 3 times in 1 day, right?
There you go.
Just making up for lost time.
Good for you.
So Thursday was great. I felt wonderful about it. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to post this, be open about it. Because if there's one thing that helped me through the last 4 years, it was empathy. It was people saying, you know, no, I know this sucks, and not saying this will get better.
Right.
But people saying, like, I've been there and I know what it's like. That's what I needed. And so I needed to share that. And, you know, like a million emails later and Facebook messages, and it's been incredible. Just like the response from this blog post has been like nothing else. It just really goes to show you. First of all, how many people out there have been like I'm getting so many emails from people being like, oh, hey, I'm disfellowship too. Some of which are like friends of mine. I'm like, oh, I didn't know you were going through
what?
That.
Yeah.
So it's really cool for a lot of people to say things like, thank you for your perspective. It makes me a lot more proud of myself and not so ashamed, because that's what I need to feel. So motivation is good, but it's also really cool just to feel so much like love and encouragement. You know, I'm a social worker, so it's kind of easy for me to look at the bad statistics in the world and be like, so many people are messed up. So many people are mean. So many people are selfish and, you know, do what they want to get what they want in life. And then, you know, you post something like this and the positive feedback I've gotten has just been like, and not even just feedback, but support. So many people saying, I am so proud of you. Like, you're such an example to me. Thank you so much for, you know, expressing your testimony and the atonement, like, yeah, all these wonderful things that make me feel amazing. And I just think, man, there really are a lot more wonderful people in the world, let alone in the church, than we think, because it's hard for me sometimes to go to church and not think like most people here are so judgmental and dumb and hypocritical, and they don't even like cool movies. They don't, you know, whatever, like, I can't relate to anybody here type of thing, which I think, you know, there's a population of Mormon intellectuals where we, you know, whatever.
Yeah, no, lump yourself in, you elitist intellectual.
But you know what? But you know, you look down on other people and you're just like, oh, well, they just have a surface level testimony. They haven't been through really hard things. And that's a really horrible thing to think. And I used to think things like that, because I think it, you know, puts people on this degrading level of inexperience, when the reality is no matter what you've gone through in life, you've experienced pain. You know, the atonement is the only thing that makes us equal, because we all need it. And so regardless of whether or not you experience severe sexual abuse as a child, or if, you know, you started like dry humping with your boyfriend and that was the one time it ever happened, and that's the worst thing you ever done, like, you can still feel unbelievable devastation in both situations. Even though someone might argue that you can't compare the two, but pain is pain.
Sure.
And so it's been really incredible to just get that feedback and empathy from people. It's been really great. I'm probably the best decision I've made in a very long time to like be this open about it, because it's a great source of missionary work. People need compassion. They don't need discipline. They need compassion.
Absolutely. Did we miss anything? Right.
I mean,
where's the time gone? Do you have any idea how long we've been talking for?
I have no, all I know is I'm missing lunch, but
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm worth it, okay?
You totally are.
Sharing the story, it's worth it.
I've got to fit into my Forever 21 jeans. So it's win-win. It's fine.
We ask everyone that comes into the Cultural Hall a few questions. Number one, do you have a calling right now?
I do.
What is it?
I'm a ward prayer something leader. I do ward prayer now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Big singles ward.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
Second thing is, if you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or one that you just are making up, whatever the calling is, what would you pick?
Relief Society president who is present during disciplinary councils and every other priesthood meeting.
Oh, there we go. All right. And then do you consider yourself a feminist?
Yeah.
Can we go there? Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
Big
God's
fan of
a
the
feminist. Anyone who believes that women are incredible and capable was a feminist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, not me then, because I don't think that women are capable.
Yeah.
I wish you could see this look that you just shot me. Not like the smile about the temple recommend and the temple. Quite different. And I'm kidding, of course. And then finally, what is your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part of my faith. Man, that's a really good question.
That's why we end on it.
My favorite part of my faith is that it's been consistent enough to allow me to relate to people. And what I mean by that is even through, you know, hardship and tribulation, all these things that typically get you really off track with like your testimony, I was always able to maintain the understanding that my heavenly parents love me and my Savior loves me regardless of my decisions. And that compassion has been able to be, you know, spread out to other people in my life. And I just feel incredibly grateful that I have a very unique experience of being able to relate to people. You know, I don't feel like I'm put in this obedient, unable to relate to corner. You know, I feel like people can approach me about things, and it's a really great missionary tool to allow that amount of faith to make people feel comfortable and loved. And
good. That's a great thing.
Yeah.
I wish you could see the faces. We got to start videoing these episodes just so people could see some of the faces. You're high as a kite right now. Where are you? What's going on in a year? You have goals?
Yeah. So I'm moving to New York on December 14th. I'm going back home to Pennsylvania, and I'm going to just finish off the year there and then move up to New York.
For what?
For life.
For what?
For the reason that God told me you got to go to New York.
That's it.
Prayed about it for a while. You know, at first it became a big escape when I was going through like ex-boyfriend PTSD and disciplinary counsel. What am I doing? You know, I need to get out of here and just escape. And then a few weeks ago, it became a really big answer. Like, you need to start over, start a new chapter, be a Mormon in Manhattan.
Cool.
Go do the work out there. Go be a social worker out there. So that's what I'm going to do.
Good luck.
Thank you.
We hope that this has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you are not healthy enough to listen this week, you will be healthy enough to listen next week. And that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat. On the back row, we really gotta go on the Cultural Hall show.